This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation. With a commitment to serving the St. Louis community through local partnerships and charitable support, guided by Parrot's core values. More at parrot.com/culture.
When Kelly Dunaway won her first election in August 2019, she helped Democrats secure a majority on the St. Louis County Council that they are unlikely to lose in the near future. But she says even before she sought a full term in office, she knew that politics was not for her. Dunaway joins me next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking to reflect on her 5 years on the council. Let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the definitive show about politics in the St. Louis region.
I thought this was an opportunity to have a new voice in that seat.
And the decisions I make in county government allows me to help people in large groups, and I enjoy it.
We're not using it as a wedge issue. We're using it more as a, you know, what's right for the region conversation.
We need to know what the issues are in our communities in order to address them.
Because people want to see change, and they want to see a St. Louis that works for everyone.
Some days I need to credit, most days I don't. But most importantly, I have to be able to control how this environment is going to evolve.
We knew that in races that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Rachel Lipman. And joining me for the fifth time? I think we're not sure in studio today for the last time, I would think, is
Kelly Dunaway, councilwoman for St. Louis County 2nd District.
And not for very much longer because Kelly Dunaway chose not to seek re-election to the 2nd District. And you announced that pretty early and pretty firmly. Was there ever a moment where you second-guessed that decision?
No, not even for 1 second. I knew a long time before I announced, and my friends knew a long time before I announced. The county executive also knew a long time before I announced, but I think he was the one holding on the most hope that I would change my mind.
And how long before you made that announcement back in January that you weren't going to go through the process had you actually decided that your one full term would be your only full term?
Honestly, I was pretty sure before I even ran for my own full term that this was not really, it just wasn't really for me. The politics, I love the policy. Like, if I could just do policy and execute policy, that would be amazing. But the politics part, the you have enemies that you don't even know that are attacking you, and you don't even really understand why. I'm not into the politics part.
And so if it was as uncertain as you said, kind of before you even ran for a term, were you just hoping that maybe things would be different than you thought they were when you ran? Or
I think so. I also, you know, the pandemic also hit very early on before I even ran the second time. But, you know, you sign up to run in March, and then the election is August, and then in November. And I'd only been on the council for a few months. It was the early days of COVID. You know, I knew I was uncomfortable with that much public spotlight, but I didn't know that it was too early, less than a year in, and with so much craziness going in, to be so sure back then.
And do you think it would have been different had COVID not shaped so much of that first, you know, was it COVID that was making you uncomfortable?
I would say it was a lot COVID, because COVID, it wasn't just the disease and the uncertainty. It was that the worst in all of us came out, and the worst in all of us. And when I say this, I mean it's so much bigger than the people who are angry and upset at vaccine and mask requirements and things. I mean, they showed up, they were angry. And I'm not saying they're the worst of us, but the behavior inside, both sides, all of us, was just so the worst of us. And Rachel, if I'm being honest, I got into politics in the first place because when Donald Trump was elected president in 2016, my first reaction was, this is not who we are. And if I'm really going to go into this and if I'm really going to put my actions behind those words that this is not who we are, I need to step in to the arena. But after being on the St. Louis County Council for 5 years, Donald Trump is who we are. And that's like the saddest part for me. But that is what I have seen over the last 5 years, as I was wrong when I thought that this is not who we are.
You mentioned that if you could do policy all day long, that would be your happy spot. Despite all of the politics, what was the biggest policy thing you were able to do during, what was it, about 5 years on the council, 4.5 years on the council?
I would say the biggest policy thing is things, because I feel like what I brought was my climate responsibility ethos to this work. And I came in guns a-blazing to update the county's building codes, to give Sierra Club a seat at the table, and to make sure that our building codes had environmental standards. And then I went into getting EV requirements in St. Louis County, and then we redid our nuisance rules on and regulations, our ordinances around what your lawns can look like, to give more flexibility for people to have native plants in their yards, and then most recently the climate action plan in St. Louis County. And so I feel like I've just been a voice for the environment for my 5 years, and all of the policy things I've been able to do and talk about and the resolutions, I just feel like I've kept our St. Louis County public's attention on the environment and climate change, and I'm really proud of that.
Was there something about the actual process that it can take to get a policy in place that you thought you understood in the, like, you know, schoolhouse rock kind of way, and then you get to actually doing it and you're like, this is, reality is so much different than how it is sold to us in civics?
Yeah. Yes. Oh my gosh. And that's the part that I just can't with it, because you bring a great, well, you know, of course, my ideas are great. A great policy idea to the table.
Or anyone brings a policy idea that you agree with to the table, even if it's not yours.
Right, exactly. And then it goes to the St. Louis County, for me, it goes to the employees, like the people who are actually going to have to execute this and who are going to have to manage it. And they make tweaks, and then the lawyers make tweaks. And then you finally get this thing that you're happy enough with. It wasn't exactly what I wanted, but it's good enough. And I can take it to the council for votes. And sometimes the things that go into who is for or against a particular policy doesn't make any sense, or the things that have to be traded or watered down to get the votes is just a really frustrating process. And then it goes to the county executive. And fortunately, we're on the same, you know, we're both Democrats. So more likely than not, I'm going to get it across his finish line. But it's still this constant push and pull. And then if it's something really controversial, you've got public more involved and people that have a financial stake and any other stakeholders get louder and more involved and water it down even more. And it's just this huge cumbersome process for what I thought was this little bitty, let's just update our building codes and make sure that people are using double-paned glass and fireproof doors and other things that make homes more efficient.
Was there ever one where it was perhaps, as you kind of went through it, you didn't realize how big something was, that you thought it was small, and then as you got into it, it's you know, it's reasonable. Like, yeah, building codes are a big thing to kind of bite and chew off, and they touch everything. Was there somewhere it was, you would say, maybe your own naivete of, I did not actually realize how big this is?
Yeah. I actually think the building codes are the perfect example of that.
It's mind-blowing how difficult those can be. You think it's so basic, and it's actually not.
Because the stakeholders are really powerful, and they don't want things to change.
And they're complicated, too. Building codes are so complicated.
I mean, so I remember this one meeting I went into, and the person who was in charge of the building code process, at the time, he's no longer with us. He lost a long battle with cancer. Great guy, Dan Dridesworth, and I went into this meeting, and he had stacked like all these books up on one table along one wall, and he said, that's the building code. And it was more of a, look what you're doing, like, look what you are making us do. And but I was really cocky and new, and I knew I had 4 votes and could do really whatever I wanted. And I would say And then it happened. I got what I wanted, mostly, against some serious pushback from the home builders and the carpenters and the people who say, you're making the cost of building a home go up. And my rebuttal, well, I'm also making the long-term cost of operating that house cheaper. But we can't sell homes on the front end if you're adding $1,000 onto the cost. And I'm like, but I'm saving $5,000 over the life of the home or more. And it became a huge political firestorm, not just for me, but for also for the county executive who signed that building code law into ordinance.
Is there a bill that, through the process of the give and take that is politics in the real world, where you maybe not regret, but the end product that came out, you're not as comfortable with as what you wanted going into it? It changed so substantially where you're like, I'm not entirely sure it was worth it to expend the effort to get what I ended up getting.
You know, that's a really great question. The one thing that comes to mind is electric vehicle, but it's not. I think at first when I came in, I had four votes again, because for the environment, I've got four votes.
And this was for to require charging on homes, or which part of the electric vehicle push was this?
It's to require companies and business owners and public entities, when they are redoing a parking lot or building a new structure, they have to put in a certain amount of electric vehicle charging stations. Some actual stations, but some parking spots only have to be like ready for stations if they want more later. But I actually, as it evolved and more voices showed up to show how the legislation was hurting them, I actually grew with it. And even though it changed and got watered down and gives some people a little bit more flexibility, I think that was the right result. Like, my guns blazing at the start on that one was what was wrong, because it ended up forcing churches to have to put in EV charging and small businesses like dry cleaners, where you're not really stopping, you're just running in and out. And those are things that needed to be exempted from that legislation. So I can't say that I can think of any that I regret as much as, wow, that was an evolution in my own process and thinking about it as well.
Was there something that, either because of the politics or it ended up being just kind of too big to get done, the one white whale, you never managed to get over the finish line?
Honestly, I don't know if this is a good idea. This is one of those policy ideas that comes from my experience in the private sector, where it's like, I saw these companies spending millions and millions and millions of dollars to slap their name on the side of a building. Well, couldn't
it happens in nonprofit sectors too?
Yes.
You know, think about universities.
Yes. And if we can sort of close that gap between the amount of money government has to provide services and the public and the private partnerships that could help close that gap, this seems like a route to doing more of that. But again, like, some of the pitfalls that people are worried about, I worry about too. I'm just an innovator, and I like to try new things and see how they work out. And, you know, maybe government isn't the right place for that, but I'd still like to leave at least a little opportunity behind me for them to close the budget deficit with some new sources of revenue.
We have kind of talked about this a little bit in the earlier questions. You came on the podcast in January and talked about the fight over the chair of the council in 2021. And you admitted that that was something that you and the other supporters got wrong. Is there anything else that you look back and go, you know, in hindsight, I did get this wrong. I did mess this up.
I think for me, the biggest thing I messed up was just the personal relationships. As a human being, I struggle with forgiveness anyway. It's not that I don't want to forgive people. I just can't. It's like, I know I'm drinking poison and wanting someone else to die by not being able to forgive people. Rationally, like, I get all of that. But I never forgave the Democrats for aligning with the Republicans against public health in the pandemic. And that's on me. Like, I can't blame anyone else for that. I never forgave them. I gave it a half-hearted attempt for a while. And I think for a while I even believed I could and wanted to. But I'm at fault for that, because I could never repair those relationships.
And how do you think that changed how you were approaching policy and conversations? Did you, you know, find yourself or what you were able to accomplish and you know, do the art of politics in the 21st century?
I mean, that's what I failed at. And that's why I can't do politics now, because you have to have relationships with people in order to have the votes that you need to pass what needs to be passed. And so I had to be very selective about what I chose to try to carry, because I knew it would be really hard to get 4 votes unless it was something that no Democrat could ever say no to. And so that's sort of where I've kind of been stuck for at this full year for sure, if not the last couple of years. I think I just sort of kind of gave up on it all, which is why it's so, I feel in some ways like I've let down the 2nd District for the last year or two, and I am sincerely sorry for that. It just, the pandemic weighed too heavy for too long.
One of the last big votes on the council that you take will be the 2025 budget. And we are talking before the council actually votes on the budget. So it's a little bit unclear what that final document is going to look like. But as you looked at what was presented, as you listened to discussions at budget meetings and at the council, have your fellow lawmakers learned the lessons you hope they would learn about building the St. Louis County budget?
No, absolutely not. I mean, here's the thing. Here's the big disconnect for me. We can't just go back to our budget director or back to our directors and say, you need to cut 10%, because the policy's on us. We need to be the ones saying what needs to be cut and where it needs to be cut. And it also feels very confrontational instead of collaborative. And I have not participated much this year. I've watched videos. I haven't gone to the meetings because it's like Groundhog Day. I've sat in these meetings twice last year, every year before that, and nothing different, nothing changes. It's all the same. And, you know, I can only do so much of the same thing over and over again and expect a different result.
Do you think anything is going to change with the new makeup of the council?
I hope so. I genuinely hope that somehow, somewhere, some way, they can all find a way to be collaborative and work for the benefit of St. Louis County, because it doesn't feel like that's what's happening now.
And we'll be right back after this quick break. And we're back on Politically Speaking with outgoing 2nd District Councilwoman Kelly Dunaway. And when you were elected, you helped the Dems take the majority on the council for the first time in a while. And you said that you were excited about the future of the county and that you were really looking forward to what is going to come after tonight. And I think I know the answer to this question, but do you feel that same way in this seat today?
Not for myself in the seat, and I'm highly skeptical about what's going to happen in St. Louis County, even moving forward, but I'm excited for myself still. I'm getting out of politics and feel like the world is my oyster.
Skeptical about what?
Just about the ability of St. Louis County to work in a collaborative way for the benefit of the future of our region.
What do you think the future of the region will be without collaboration?
Status quo. We'll continue to lose population. Our kids won't want to move back here after they go to college. We'll be trying to find other people to move here, whether it's immigrants or people from other states. I just think it's going to be an ongoing struggle.
And what is the county missing?
Well, I'm gonna take your question. I'm gonna sort of flip it back, because it's not what's missing. It's what is under the undercurrent. It's us versus them. It's the county versus the city. It's Maryland Heights versus Fenton. It's the St. Louis County Council versus the St. Louis County Executive. It's us versus them. It's not what's missing. It's what's there. That's the problem. And I think until those bridges get repaired, until St. Louis City and St. Louis County and Bridgeton and Fenton and Maryland Heights all feel like we are one region and want to work together to solve regional problems together, I think that is going to be what continues to get in the way of our growth and expansion.
So you backed Nicole Greer in the primary to replace you, which ended up being essentially the general election. And she lost an extremely close primary. I think it was less than 100 votes. It was somewhere in that range. What's your take on what happened there?
I just think that Gretchen Bangert, who won the election, had more money and was able to reach more voters. Unfortunately, it is about money. And she just had more people. And I also think there was a big wall of support from North County to get someone from North County in that seat. And, you know, I hope that it works out in North County's favor, having that three strong Democratic women who are in the second district, the first district, and the fourth district really working together to bring more resources and voice and attention to North County.
There was a third Democratic candidate, didn't seem to do a lot of campaigning in that race, but the total that she got was more than that margin of victory. Did that surprise you at all?
I mean, it just doesn't, because I think her friends voted for her, her network voted for her, the people, the few doors that she hit or, you know, that was able to get to social media voted for her. Or it was just like people got in the ballot box and didn't recognize any of the names and were just like, I'll just pick this one.
Is there anything about what happened in Missouri in either August or November in the general or primary elections that surprised you?
I think the only surprise is that, I mean, I think Missouri was consistent, and I can't say I'm surprised. It's still weird. I still find it weird that Missouri votes for progressive policies and then people that are going to fight them. But, you know, maybe that's the way to keep it going here.
Were you surprised that Amendment 3 didn't have longer coattails? You know, I was looking at 6th district and thinking, man, they can possibly flip a 5-2. This is a close district. And it was nothing. It was Amendment 3 and nothing else.
Yeah. I mean, I just think my take on that is that Missourians don't want the government telling them what to do with their bodies. And it's not politics. It's not, I'm going to vote for Amendment 3, and I'm going to vote for Lucas Kuntz. Nope. I think it was, I'm going to vote to make decisions about my body, and I'm going to vote for my party.
What would you tell Michael Archer and Gretchen Bangert, the two new members of the council? What advice do you have for them to just being able to get along on that body and to do the policies and advance the policies they want to?
I think they're going to have an easier time with that. I mean, there's no COVID now. They're both going into a pretty welcoming environment to them. And the Republicans and the Democrats, for the most part, except for myself, do get along. So maybe, you know, once I'm gone, it'll all be better.
Are there lessons that you're going to take from your time on the council that you'll apply in that training and coaching career that you now have for attorneys, either how to do something or just something not to do? Absolutely.
Oh, definitely. I think the first thing that the most important lesson that I've learned for myself is that I ain't all that, right? You win an election and you have thousands of people like choosing you. It went to my head. I came in guns a-blazing, like I'm the coolest thing ever. It turns out I'm not. I'm just a normal person that's trying to get through the day and through the year and be a good mom and do my part to make the world a better place. And I think that humility was something I really, really needed. And I'm grateful for it because it makes me better able to empathize and reach across to people that aren't like me, I think.
Are you done with elected office in general or just county council?
Oh, I'm done. Elected office is not for me. That kind of public spotlight is not for me. I want to do policy work, certainly, and I would love to find some regional project to work on in our St. Louis region that sort of pulls all the different people together and to achieve some common goal. But it's not an elected office for me.
What's a hidden gem of the second district that you learned about because of your role on the St. Louis County Council and you want to share it with the world?
I mean, the thing is it's not a secret. The gem of the second district is Creve Coeur Lake, Creve Coeur Park. It's a beautiful place. It has such fun amenities and there's just so much to see and do and feel and be a part of nature there. I just hope everybody gets out there regularly.
So you now have your Tuesday nights back. You've got hours of time responding to constituent requests, watching the videos of those meetings. What are you going to do with your free time now?
That is a very good question, Rachel. I mean, I'm pretty excited about the Marcus Theater Tuesday deal. I'm going to see more movies. I'm going to read more books.
What's your Oscar bait pick this year?
Oh, I have no idea. I watch terrible movies.
What's the movie you're most looking forward to being able to see at that deal?
I don't even know. Right now the only movies I watch are with my kids, and so I know that Moana's out, and I know that Wicked's out because I've seen them both. But like for myself to like choose a movie and go, I don't even know what's out.
What's the biggest takeaway from those 5 years on the county council as you look and you're almost done with that time?
My biggest takeaway, I'm so grateful that the people of the 2nd District trusted me twice to represent them. And I loved getting to see the amazing people that work for St. Louis County and that try to support St. Louis Countyans through roads and parks and in ways that you can't even imagine, library programs that you didn't even know existed. There is so much really cool stuff going on in St. Louis County, and the people that do the work to pull it all off rarely get the light of the day. And getting to see them in action and knowing them, and it's just really, that has been a truly extraordinary experience for me, getting to see all the amazing things happening out in the world here. There are people that work so hard to make this region better, and I'm grateful I got a little bit more insight into that as well. And I think there's a big, bright future for St. Louis as a region if we can just figure out how we can work together instead of always competing against each other.
Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. I'm Rachel Lippman. I was joined today by Kelly Dunaway. Kelly, thank you for coming on the podcast.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me, Rachel, and I hope you have a great holiday.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.